What is this place?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back with our podcast for What Is This Place? The podcast. We are a very low budget operation, as you're going to soon find out. But we come with it, come at it with heart.
Clearly a high crime area.
A high crime area. So just real quick introductions. I am your host, Al Shirtum, here with the director, writer, filmographer, cinematographer, camera person.
All right.
You know, all that of the mini docuseries, What Is This Place? Federico Ferro. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. So it's been quite some time since our first What Is This Place, the podcast. This is now our second episode. However, we're going to be jumping around a little bit. In this episode, we are going to cover San Lorenzo. Just so you know that these podcasts coincide, try to explain everything, kind of going to recap that, this program and all his programs, you know, and there's going to be a sister podcast to go with it to kind of explain what's going on. So with that said, today, San Lorenzo, big club.
Right. So just to recap a little bit from episode one, I went down with the idea of filming some stadiums in Argentina.
Right.
Right. That was born out of me going back to Argentina during the World Cup in 2022 and then visiting a few times after that. And I thought it was a good idea to go visit some local clubs, smaller right. clubs, just to capture the essence of the fan base.
The ambiance, yeah.
Right. Right. What drives these people to support these local clubs,
yeah.
What they're all about, what their beliefs are. So I went down, and the idea was to really go and film mostly second division, third division teams. I figured I'd have more access to, I'd have easier access, more accessible access to them. But I had an opportunity with a cousin of mine's boyfriend who knew somebody at this club called San Lorenzo de Almagro. Now, he had this connection, and I figured I might as well jump on it because San Lorenzo is a big club. They're considered the fifth biggest. In Argentina, there's five clubs, right? There's five big clubs. There's Boca Juniors and River Plate, who, you know, most people that know soccer around the world will probably know those two huge teams. And along with those two, who, when they play each other, make up the Super Clásico when they play, there's the Clásico from Avellaneda, which is like just south of Buenos Aires. It could be considered part of Buenos Aires, in the province of Buenos Aires, between Racing Club and Independiente. That's the other huge Clásico in the area. And then there's San Lorenzo. And San Lorenzo is considered the fifth biggest club in Argentina. They have a huge fan base. They have fans all over the world. They've been around forever. And they've won a lot of titles. They've won international titles. And they're a big deal in Argentina. But they might not be as well known as, you know, some of the bigger clubs in coming out of Argentina. Even lately, there's clubs like Vélez Sarsfield, who's had a lot of success, even more so than San Lorenzo, maybe in the last 30 years, even though San Lorenzo won the all-important Copa de Libertadores 10 years ago.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about that. But so the one thing, not to cut you off, but this San Lorenzo one, by far and away, has become your most popular episode. And it seems like there was a real buy-in from the San Lorenzo people right down there. So, but since we're talking, we can presume, I think safely, that this probably will be the most imbibed podcast since the video was the most watched video. So with that, I would like you to read in Spanish to the San Lorenzo faithful this disclaimer for me, please.
Just so everybody knows, this is the first time I'm reading this. Disclaimer, it's me. What does that say?
You have to say it in Spanish.
Oh, I don't even know what that says.
It's me and a Yankee.
Oh, Yeah. Oh, you want me to say in Spanish?
Yes, please.
Oh, okay.
So
okay,
they
okay,
can
okay,
understand
okay.
this. Yeah.
All right.
In their native tongue.
This is a disclaimer. Esto es para los argentinos. Mi amigo Albert quiere que lean estos. Esto. Soy yo, un yankee, que sabe poco y nada de fútbol. As you will soon be. As you will soon be what?
As soon as you will soon see. But, and then it says he's trying.
Oh.
give him a break.
Soy yo, un yankee, uno que sabe poco y nada del fútbol. Estoy intentando mi mejor. No me rompan las bolas. Okay.
Okay.
Well, there's Al disclaimer.
There's my Al disclaimer. All right. So let's start. All the thread, the common thread I see between all three, you know, all the videos that you have, every club,
right,
is that game day is sacrosanct. Like it is just a gathering mm-hmm. to celebrate their neighborhoods, their culture, their
right.
football, right?
Right. It's their version of the tailgate, really.
Yeah, which, by the way, I love that in the one video, I believe it was the All Boys video that we'll talk about in the next episode, how you can compare and contrast it to folks going into the Giant Stadium here.
It's a little different.
Yeah, and that's what I'm trying, like, I think your videos kind of capture well, is that we have no equivalent of that here in the States. Like of the atmosphere that's generated around
right.
a football game.
I when I go to a basketball game or football game and it's, the chants are forced, you know, you get like the PA announcer yelling defense, defense. And the chants are just really bland and they're trying to force it. And sometimes it pumps like noise into the stadium.
Yeah,
artificial
noise,
it's just
yeah.
not natural and it just seems fake. And I'm not saying that the fans aren't passionate because they are, but it's something just seems forced sometimes by the teams themselves or the stadiums themselves that they're trying to generate this feeling, they're trying to generate this passion or
manufactured atmosphere.
That's the good way to put it. Manufactured atmosphere.
Right, right.
I think just comes off as hollow. And, you know, when you see something like thousands and thousands of fans coming up and singing the same song at the same time, where everybody knows the lyrics, and I don't know how this happens. I'm really not sure where these songs are born out of. Like, somebody's got to come up with the theme.
Yeah,
the song
somewhere along the way. Yeah.
Usually it's a famous song that they just replace the lyrics to, and they make it about a player, or they make it about a theme, or they make it about a game, or another club that they hate.
We got Super Bowl Mullin, like they do on Wrexham, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, 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 right. And
just don't think you understand. That's obviously a song that they just change the lyrics around. Right.
Yeah. What amazes me sometimes is there's stuff that comes up like out of nowhere, because it's not like they planned it, but they start like just chanting singing all the same lyrics and song, and they all start doing it. It's like infectious, and they just figure it out. And it's the whole section of the crowd singing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so right. Do they have like a Fireman Ed? You know how the Jets have Fireman Ed?
So
like, is that where it starts in the stadium and cascades outward, or does it start anywhere?
So I was watching a video the other day.
For those of you who are not familiar with Fireman Ed, he's a New York Jets football here, American football.
Right.
He starts the J-E-T-S Jets chant at the beginning
of
every game.
Yeah, he gets the crowd going. He takes off his helmet, gets the crowd going.
Every kickoff, right.
And he's got J-E-T-S. And that's, you know, that's like the most original chanting I've heard. Now, I'm not going to put college football in that because I think college football is a little different.
Yeah, that's different.
You can feel the vibrancy and the passion in those crowds. So it's a little different. And maybe hockey might be a little different. But for the most part, from my history of watching sports in baseball, football and basketball, it just seems very forced and manufactured, a lot of it.
And I think a lot of it has to do, too, with how corporatized we are here in the States, right? Like, our expensive seats, the seats around the field, are all priced out of the ordinary Joe fan is priced out.
I would say that, but if you go to soccer games in Europe, where it's as corporate as hell, like, Manchester United is, I think, on a stock exchange. You know, these are clubs with a lot of money who cater to people with a lot of money, and they're they're giving less of a shit about the smaller person going to stadium, more about the tourists going to paying big money to go to stadiums. But you can still hear the chants that come out of nowhere. And you know, there's some funny as hell chants, especially in England. There's some really funny chants that, yeah, you know. And they, I love when they start singing to a coach that's in trouble. They goes, "You're getting sacked in the morning. Right. You're getting sacked in the morning." You know, it comes out of nowhere. No, it's just so perfect.
Right. And, right.
It's just it's just great stuff.
Well, I mean, at least it's like, you know, you always know where you stand, you know, I suppose, in a way.
But I just thought that, like, but it's just, you know, just to touch that on again, it's just, you know, like the defense chants and, you know, some of the, you know, the most natural chants that come out is when somebody, some player does like some jerk thing and everybody starts saying, asshole.
Yeah, right.
So that feels kind of like. Yeah. Spontaneous, at least, you know.
So, what time on these days on game day, especially if it's Saturday, right? Do they play on Tuesdays and Saturdays in Argentina just the same, or is it?
Did you say Tuesdays?
Yeah, don't they play Tuesdays in England or no?
No, they play on for the Premier League.
Yeah, I thought it was Tuesdays and Saturdays. No.
No, they play. They'll usually try to play Saturdays and Sundays.
Uh huh.
Tuesdays and Wednesdays are more for Champions League and...
Oh, is that right?
Cup,
okay. You know, all right, fair enough.
And cup games.
So on that day, on game day, whatever, it's Saturday or Sunday in Argentina.
I mean, it could be Friday and Monday, depending on...
Yeah.
But mostly it's weekend. Yeah.
So what time does it start in the morning and what time does it shut down? Like, you know, the festivities.
Game or the festivities? Yeah. So it's like...
When do people know when to convene and, you know, is that also just something like you just follow the crowd kind of thing? Or
they know. I mean, it starts early. It's like tailgating here. Like here, you know, at the parking lots in the stadiums, you'll see people tailgating 4, 5, 6 hours before a game, right?
Right.
There, it's very different. You know, you're not just hanging out in a parking lot. It's neighborhoods. The stadiums are in neighborhoods for the most part. Not all.
It's like literally right there.
You're just in a, let's just say you're just in a regular neighborhood with houses and little stores everywhere, and then there's just this stadium there that fits 20,000, 30,000.
I think that's what makes Fenway Park still so unique.
Right,
right.
And even Yankee Stadium was like that too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think they built around the stadium, whereas Fenway Park was always kind of just like in the middle of...
Right.
Yeah, you could walk by it. You could drive by it and not even know you drove by it, you know?
Right.
Because it's also subterranean a little as well.
Yeah. There's... For these, the pregame, which is called la previa, which previa means before, the fans know where to go, depending on the stadium. Like for San Lorenzo, they're just hanging out right across the street, the busy street, and it's all up and down the street. And every stadium is different, right? So some neighborhoods are smaller, so people know where to meet, but San Lorenzo... we'll get into it later, but because the fans come from so many places in Buenos Aires, mm-hmm. A lot of fans get bussed in, and then they come out off the buses and hang out on the street, and then they go into the stadium.
So it's basically morning till...
Oh, yeah.
Night.
So
yeah.
They'll start 4 hours before the game. And
what time does generally kick off, you know, down there?
It depends. It's not like here where it's, you know, football's 1 o'clock and then 4 o'clock.
Or, yeah.
There it's... It is between those hours, you know, but they're staggered sometimes. You'll have some 1 o'clock games and 3 and then 5 and
so
then 7.
If it's earlier the game, the earlier people are up.
Yeah.
But yeah.
They'll start early.
Right. Now.
Oh, they'll go straight from the club. Like,
they'll close out the nightclub.
It's a late nightlife in Argentina, and they'll close out the clubs like at 7 in the morning, and then they'll just keep going if it's an early game. If it's like a noon, 1 o'clock game.
Right.
So, some people just won't go to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. We probably would have done that in our younger days.
For sure.
In our much younger days. Anyway, so we talked about the Copa Libertadores. Libertadores?
Libertadores.
What is that? For the American fan.
Right. So Copa Libertadores,
significance of that,
is a really old tournament. It is basically the Champions League for South America.
Okay.
So.
And you open the video with the 2014 victory for San Lorenzo.
Right.
Now, who would have been their competition? How widespread is the competition?
So it's like the Champions League back in the day. It was in the 50s when it started. The Champions League was every champion from each country would play each other in a tournament.
In Europe.
And whoever was... I mean, when it first started, it was the European Cup. Now it's the Champions League. And there's a Champions League here in North America, you know, in CONCACAF and CONMEBOL, which South America has its own Champions League, where all 10 South American countries go into a tournament with the best teams from each country. So usually it'll be 4 teams from Argentina, 4, 5, 6 from Brazil, 2 or 3 from Uruguay, and then, you know, a couple from
club each teams.
Club teams, yeah. So in Argentina, all the big clubs had won a Copa Libertadores. So Boca had won, I think they have 6, whatever, play has, before 2014, River, I think only had 2 or 3. Now they've won a couple more. Racing won the one.
You're talking about the Man City and Liverpool of Argentina, basically, right?
Copa. For Boca and Boca River Plate, yeah.
And River Plate.
And then Racing Club and Independiente, which Independiente has 7 Copa Libertadores, so they're considered the king of cups in Argentina.
Right.
And then there's other clubs like Vélez and Estudiantes who have their own, they won the Libertadores, but San Lorenzo never won it. You know, that was always a big thing for them because they were a big club and they had never won the big one.
Right.
And it kind of came out of nowhere. But yeah, and they went up against this Paraguayan team, Nacional, who I didn't know much about. But yeah, they made the final and they won it. So that's why I started with that, because it's such a big deal for them. And I think they...
And it's their only one in history.
It's their only one. They've never been back.
I mean, it brought the Pope. I mean, and you made it a point to say that this is the Pope's childhood team, his favorite team.
Right, it's his
but
team.
Did he come specially, or did he invite them to the Vatican? How did that go down?
Yeah, so they were there not even when they won the Libertadores. I think when they won the local tournament, the local Argentina, they went there, and the Pope received them.
So anything they win, Pope will have a party for them.
I guess
in the Vatican,
Argentinians find any reason to travel. Yeah. There's a lot of Argentinians always complain about not having money or the economy, but they made it to Qatar somehow anyway. Yeah, so the Pope was you know, San Lorenzo being founded by, you know, has religious overtones, and the Pope being a San Lorenzo fan, and then winning the Libertadores right around, I don't know how long he's been a Pope, but it could have been.
Yeah, I'm sure we could find that information.
But it was shortly after he became Pope that they won the Libertadores. So they went and visited the Pope in the Vatican, and he received them. So it was, it's all kind of like placed together, you know, the Pope, San Lorenzo, which was, it's named after a priest in that helped start the club. His name was Lorenzo, even though.
And he was canonized? Legit? Or is it just?
No.
No.
The story goes that he saw these kids playing in the street. He said, come play in the courtyard, in my courtyard, but you have to go to church.
Yeah. So Pope Francis was elected Pope on March 13th, 2013.
So a year later, they won.
Yeah,
They won.
They probably thought it was, wow, look at that. We get our Pope in there, and we win.
It was all in the cards because if you think about it, San Lorenzo won the Libertadores, and then Argentina went to the final in the World Cup in 2014.
And that's when Messi missed the penalty kick, right? Yeah.
No, he didn't miss.
I thought he missed the penalty kick.
No, I was in Copa America 2016. I was there.
Oh,
and what was in the Netherlands?
2014.
2014, they lost to Germany in extra time in the final.
Oh, World Cup final.
World Cup final.
Where was that?
That one was in, where was 2014? Why am I drawing a blank? 2010 was South Africa.
Yeah, I remember the Spain
was
and
Brazil.
The Brazil.
It was in Brazil.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't think Germany won a World Cup that as early as 2014.
Yeah.
Wow. Because they've fallen off so much, like since then, you know, and then now they're back up. Yeah,
are they?
Well, I mean, they made it pretty far in the Euros, didn't they? Final four? No, final. Well,
Germany is about finals. I don't think if they don't make the final, I don't think they're happy. But yeah, they lost to Germany in extra time.
Why do the Germans have some sort of history of wanting to dominate? I don't know what it is you're talking about. Like it's. That just seems
there,
like...
There might be some history there.
Maybe. We'd have to look.
There's some books on that.
We'd have to look that up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So, we know the Pope's affiliation with them. They win this Copa Libertadores. And then what happens? What's been going on since 2014? Are they always in qualification to win it all, or are they always there?
Just to finish up on the founding, just because I started it. So this guy, Lorenzo, Father Lorenzo, told these kids they could play in the church courtyard.
Right.
Only if they went to Mass every Sunday. And that's where they started. That's where the team kind of had its beginnings. And then they were trying to come up with a team name, a club name. And they said, let's name it after the priest. And his name was Lorenzo, but he's like, I don't want to be named after me because, you know, I'm trying to be humble, I guess. But there was press. There was a battle of San Lorenzo in Argentina. So I think it was let's name it after him. So anyway, that's how the club started. So it's San Lorenzo de Almagro. Almagro is a neighborhood in Argentina.
Boedo?
But Boedo, it's a really old club. It started in 1914. So the neighborhood of Boedo and Almagro are basically the same. They're called San Lorenzo de Almagro, but the neighborhood that the club was in was in Boedo. Just so. I was confused when I was trying to figure it out.
Okay, all right.
And now they're in Baco Flores, which is another neighborhood.
Okay, so let's talk about Baco Flores and Boedo.
Wait, what did you ask me before, just now, before I went off?
I don't even remember. We're doing great on this. This is this is such a professional operation.
That's right. That's why
the people who are listening right now are like, oh my God, these two really know what they're doing.
That's the magic of editing.
Yeah, yeah. God for the magic of editing. All right. So I forgot the previous question. So we're going to talk about Boedo and Flores.
Baco Flores. Yeah.
Baco Flores or Flores. Yeah. How long now was the exodus from Boedo when they were now just get the history here.
Okay.
The junta, they were playing in Boedo, San Lorenzo.
Let's start from the beginning.
All right.
So shortly after their founding.
Tell me, and I want to know how the junta plays into all this.
Right.
Yeah. All right.
Shortly after their founding, you know, over 100 years ago, they didn't have a stadium yet. The club was founded in 1908. The stadium was opened in 1916. They had the biggest stadium in the country. It was a 75,000 person stadium.
Right. It looked legit.
Yeah. In the neighborhood of Boedo, which is an old classic Argentine neighborhood with, you know, a lot of culture, a lot of where everybody thinks of Argentina. That's like where a lot of that culture of Argentina comes from.
Like almost like the Greenwich Village.
It's like old New York City. It's like old Buenos Aires, let's call it, right?
Okay, old Buenos Aires.
Yeah, it's a lot of culture there, a lot of history there, a lot of folklore, as they call it, folklore. A lot of tango, as one can
now,
say.
Now, did they use the term folklore because they know they're going to embellish some stories? Like, so they use that? The history is always embellished? Is it kind of like, because when I hear folklore, I think embellished history. No?
In you'll hear a lot of folklore, they'll say it, when talking to, especially when it comes to soccer. And they don't call it, I think they consider it less history and more tradition.
Got it.
Right? So okay. The folklore of Argentina is the tango, the asado, the soccer. It's all combined into one, and that's the traditions.
That's folklore.
Like
that's the way they
in the first episode, when I was talking to the old guy, and I was talking about how the Atlanta fans are made fun of by other clubs because they have a lot of Jewish following.
Sure,
they have a lot of Jewish support. Yeah. And the guy from Atlanta,
that never goes wrong either. You know.
The guy from Atlanta who's been at the club for decades. He's like, yeah, he's like, that happens, but, you know, that's part of the folklore. He's like, kind of like throwing up his arms. He's like, that's the tradition, you know. It's not mean-spirited, it's just what it is. So it's kind of like that kind of
okay.
thing.
Okay, all right, got it.
And you know, it's not just for that kind of thing. It's just, it embodies everything. Folklore is tradition.
Okay, understood.
So anyway, the stadium is built. They have the biggest stadium in the country. Seats over 75,000 people, which is pretty big. And it's in Boedo. They have they're a very successful club. They've been called the greatest club in the world a couple times in the 40s, and I think sometimes in the 60s. They used to do tours in Europe where they kicked everybody's ass. They beat the Portuguese national team, the Spanish national team. They went on a 10-game tour where they didn't lose to anybody except for Real Madrid. But they had something going on. They were considered
on a world stage. They were taken seriously.
Yeah, they were known for, you know, for being the 40s and 50s, they were known, and they people con- a lot of people consider them the best team in the world.
Really? San Lorenzo?
San Lorenzo, yeah.
Okay.
And...
is that as big as an Argentine club team has ever gotten?
Be considered the best team in the world?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, it's...
I mean,
it's,
was there ever a time where Boca or...
Well, things have changed so much because if you think about it,
in that
40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, most of the Argentinian players played in Argentina. Most of the Brazilian players played in Brazil. So when Santos of Pelé was coming up, they were the best team in the world. But that's because these countries weren't selling their best players to Europe. Now it's impossible for a Brazilian or an Argentinian or a Uruguayan team to be considered the best player in the world because all the Argentinian, Brazilian, Uruguayans go to Europe. So the best team in the world is going to be a team with the most money, which is a Man City, you know, PSG, even though they never got there, but, you know, those kind of teams.
Right.
So, you know, they have a good thing going on. In the 70s, they kind of run into some mismanagement. The economy's not doing great. The government keeps getting knocked over by the military, by military coups. And in the late...
And what decades is this?
This is in the 70s.
Okay.
So in the 70s is the height of, you know, the dirty war where people are disappearing. You know, this is right before the World Cup in 78. When the World Cup final was being played, there was people being tortured, you know, just a few blocks away.
Yeah, right.
You know, the numbers are 30,000 people disappeared. There was guerrilla warfare in the streets. You know, it was not a good time. And that eventually led to the war with England for over the
Falklands.
Islas Malvinas.
Yeah.
And through mismanagement, a lot of debt, and I've heard from some San Lorenzo fans saying coercion, persuasion, or forcibly being told that they had to sell their property by the government to the by military government, San Lorenzo had to sell the property of their grounds.
Now, is that we have no corroboration on that? That's just the locals' folklore?
I don't know if it's folklore. It's just from talking to people, you know, I'm reading material. It's been through mismanagement, through lots of debt, and through coercion from the government, they ended up selling the property that the stadium was on.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So maybe because they were in so much debt, the government was like, sell it to us, and you know,
get or the they out. Told them sell it to us, or you know, or, you don't really have a choice. You know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I wouldn't think it would be a democratic conversation. Yeah.
The stadium was called El Gasómetro. Gasómetro is a gas meter. So they said that the outside of the stadium looked like a big gas meter. Anyway, that was what it was called. That was a nickname, Gasometro. So they ended up selling it to the government or the military.
And what year? The 70s again?
This was the late 70s.
Late 70s.
The government ended up selling it to a supermarket, a French supermarket chain called Carrefour. And the stadium was torn down. Supermarket was built. And San Lorenzo was on the move.
How long were they nomadic until they ended up in Flores?
So they... I was in Argentina when the new stadium opened in, I believe, 93. Yeah, it was 93. And I went to a few games there when it was first opened. And so we got to figure they were bumming around for about 15 years, 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
So they were going to other club stadiums.
So they went from this mighty 75,000-seat stadium
to
literally playing on other teams' fields when they could.
Right.
Until they got their own space in 93 again.
So they got this space.
And they've been there since for 33 years now, right? Did I do my math right?
30 something years.
Yeah, 32
so
years.
So they bought this land or they built a stadium on this land. And even in the 90s, it's surrounded by some pretty rough neighborhoods. And today too. Like when I went there, they're like, all right. Just try to stay off this street. Don't go up there. Don't go past that bridge. You know, they were telling me where not to go. And you can tell, if you look at the footage, you can see like, so there's like a lot of, there's some garbage laying around, like some dirt roads aren't fixed up. It looks pretty run down, some of the areas around
right,
the stadium.
Right, yeah.
But the new stadium is named after the old president of the team, but it's a, It's called the new gas meter, El Nuevo Gasómetro, they called it. So that's what it's called now. And that's where they've been since 93. And but, you know, the dream is to return to Boedo. That's the dream of all of these fans.
Now, the generations that weren't born.
Right. The kids in the video.
Yeah, you see the two young kids. They got to be in their 20s.
20. It's like 22.
Yeah. So, and wait, what was he talking? He was saying that he woke up this morning drunk and then what? Like, what was he?
He said he woke up. He said, yeah, last night I went out with this chick. I got drunk. And I was like, oh, I got up. I was like, oh, I got to go see my club. I got to see San Lorenzo. And then he pointed to the girl. He's like, she went out to the club dancing last night. And when she got up, she's like, I got to go see San Lorenzo. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
He was just, you know, he's like, got to go to church. That's what they call it. So he's like, that's time cool. to go to mass. Yeah.
Now, what I noticed, that there are folks, speaking of that, that go there just for the experience of singing. They don't even know what the score is. They kind of gauge the score off of the reaction of the fans.
Right.
And the songs that are being sang around the stadium.
So in the last episode, I've mentioned how behind the goals at Popular, which is the cheaper seats, but where the rowdiest fans go. They put up a lot of banners on the fence.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Flag.
And overhead banners.
And you can't see past those banners. You just can't unless you poke your head or you sit to the sides or high enough where you can see what's going on. And San Lorenzo, which is a bigger stadium.
They're very big on obstructing views.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. People would go nuts here. If you like.
I mean, the first video that we saw that we talked about on the podcast, they had the banners up.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. That's in every stadium. The banners go up and they obstruct. You can't see unless you poke your head around the banner.
You would think for something as beloved as football that they would.
But it's crazy. Yeah. Like, there's, first of all, the guys playing the instruments, they don't watch the game.
We're gonna ask.
So you got the guys playing.
Especially San Lorenzo, they got some serious instruments going there.
Yeah, but yeah. They don't watch the game. They're just there.
They know
what's going on because when there's a goal, they get to feel it, and then they start playing whatever goal music is. The guys that are standing up on the railings and holding the flags, they're not even looking at the game. They're looking up at the crowd, getting the crowd going, and they're the ones that kind of like, I'm not sure who picks what song they're gonna play, but. I've heard certain things. We could touch on that later, but those guys are just getting a crowd up, right? And then there's people at the bottom of the stands, but they're behind the banners and they're just hanging out, dancing, singing. Yeah. And like in the video, there's the one guy with his son. He's like, we don't come here to watch games. We just come here to sing. And
yeah, that's
like, he wasn't even sure what the score was. It's like, I think we're losing 1-0.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, the songs are going.
Is winning 1-0.
I think we're losing 1-0, but he's like, you'll know when we score. Yeah. So yeah, it's bizarre. It's bizarre because that is just something it was bizarre to me. And I know about Argentina soccer, but when you're there and you're like, these people buy these tickets and they're not even, they're interested in what's going on, but they're also
just there for the party.
They're for the party, for the vibes, and to back up the team. Like they're there just to like get loud and make sure the team hears them, bad or good.
Yeah, and I think one of the here's what I've noticed. Like, and I think this is there's somewhat. I don't know if it's how big or significant of a shift there is here, but there is a shift. I think, particularly when we talk about international soccer, like when they wear their countries on their shirts, I think we gravitate more towards that than we do our club level teams here. Because again,
you're talking about MLS.
Yeah, but I think why soccer is picking up and becoming more popular, like with your son's generation, both your son's generations. I think we're seeing that because it's done. It starts. It finishes. Right. Like. Whereas if you've ever gone to a live NFL game, like you and I both have, it's one of those boring sports to take in live.
It's incredible.
Yeah, because there's so much downtime, right? Yes. And I'm sure if anyone from the NFL just heard me say that, they're going to hate it. But it's true.
I took my cousin.
It's a boring product live.
I took my cousin to a game once, and it was commercial break, and
there's a clock with the commercial time.
Now there is.
Yeah, now, yeah.
But, you know, the ball's just there. The offense is on one side, defense is on the other side. They're just standing around. The refs are just standing around talking. The fans are just standing around. And my cousin's like, what's going on? Yeah. Why aren't they playing the game that we came here to watch?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, it's a commercial.
Yeah, and they complain about only having three timeouts, but they don't take into account all these commercials like that that are essentially free timeouts. So, like,
right.
People are just standing around looking at each other, and you're just sitting there as a fan. Like, and if you tailgated, like we did, now, like, the buzz is wearing off. Like, you know? Like,
right.
Yeah, and you're just like, oh, come on, play the damn game.
He can't believe it. It's like, he's like, what? He's like, we're waiting for the commercial? We're waiting for the TV to come back?
Yeah.
That's what we're just waiting here, watching these big guys just standing around a ball doing nothing?
Yeah, yeah.
It blew his mind.
It blows your mind. Yeah, I saw a same thing. I was a four-minute clock counting down. I'm like, what the hell is that? And somebody's like, they're adding commercial. I'm like, we have to sit here for 4 minutes doing nothing? Like, you know,
And baseball, forget it. I mean, baseball, now that they sped it up a little bit, it's probably a little... I haven't been to a baseball game since they sped up the clock.
Look at what it takes, right? Like, they have to put in these very, you know, inorganic,
right,
you know, gimmicks to speed up the game, whereas soccer has been pure with a couple of rule changes here and there, you know, I think for more scoring and all that, but it starts and then it ends 90 minutes or so later.
Maybe 2 hours. The game's over, unless there's... It's a cup and it's extra time, but 2 hours.
Right, like the France, Argentina final.
Right.
But even when it gets to that level, it is a exceptional product to watch, right? Like, you know, the next goal wins. It's you're on the edge of your seat every time somebody touches the ball. You know, like, but
I mean, you can have some shitty games too.
Oh yeah. 1,000. Like, that's the whole thing we talked about, parking the bus. Like, it really does take away from quality of play, big time. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, we can debate that to our blue in the face, but like in hockey, that neutral zone trapping, they got rid of that because the Devils made it so hard to score. They have to do something.
You got to counteract.
Because parking the bus, when a team is parking the bus, I don't watch the game. I'm like, I'm done with this game. I'm going to watch something else.
I know, yeah. But at some point when you have
it's such a cowardly
a budget
way to play,
of like a tenth of the team that you're playing against and they have the best players.
Have they ever discussed, let's talk about that. Have they ever discussed revenue sharing? Have they ever discussed?
Where?
In like, let's say, take the Premier League, for example. They're the haves and have-nots there more than anyone in the world, right? Like, because I think it's the most relatable league as everybody watches it. Man City, Man U, the London-based teams, Arsenal, Tottenham, and who else is in London?
Liverpool.
Chelsea. Yeah. Chelsea, thank you. I know there's another big team there. These are the haves, right? And now, of course, team that's across from Sunderland, Newcastle. Right, now Newcastle as well. Have they ever discussed a model where they have to revenue, if their payroll for their team goes over a certain, like here, the luxury tax, baseball's a perfect example. Baseball doesn't have a salary cap, but they do have a luxury tax, right? Mm-hmm. If your salary exceeds over this, you have to pay a dollar for dollar that you're over to the rest of the Major League Baseball, you know. And in the NFL, many people don't know this, but it is the most socialistic model of any sports team ever.
Sports league, ever.
Right. Right? The New York Giants essentially make the Green Bay Packers an equal, right? Because
Because they all get the same TV money, right?
That too. Everything's split.
But I think Premier League all get the same TV money. They don't.
Right, but they also revenue share as well. So, like, every jersey that Saquon Barkley sold when he was with the Giants, that Odell Beckham sold when he was with the Giants.
Oh, really?
They
share all that?
All that revenue sharing is dispersed.
I didn't know that was... Yeah. I didn't know it was like that.
Yep, yeah.
No, in the Premier League, I think they all share the TV money equally.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think Man City's sharing their sales of Phil Foden and Haaland shirts with Ipswich.
Right.
No.
Right.
I don't think they do that.
Right. Yeah.
So the discrepancy between Ipswich and Man City is just that.
Yeah. So how did it?
Man City is basically owned by a oil rich country, and Ipswich is owned by some, I don't know who, but
some guy named Ipswich, probably.
Some like guy that owns maybe
Hank
couple
Ipswich.
Tractors and,
yeah.
And
Henry Ipswich from Ipswich.
Oh, by the way, did you know that Taco Bell was started by a guy called Bell?
Yeah, no, I knew that. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
I just found out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a guy named Bell. Mm-hmm. That's nuts. Because I always wondered what the correlation between a taco and a bell were.
Now, same thing with Pilates. There's a guy called Pilates.
Yo, that I knew. Yeah, that I knew. Yeah.
Well, I knew all this stuff.
Yeah. But Tybo, there's no guy named Tybo, though. But Tybo. Anyway, so what we were saying. the Ipswich, when they come up to the Premier League,
right,
they have to make renovations to their stadiums, right?
If they're, I think Ipswich is already, Ipswich is a pretty big team, so they've been in the first division.
All right, there was that team you talked about where you have to cut through people's lawns to get to their bleachers.
Oh, Luton. Yeah, they had to make
adjustments. What was the name of the town?
Luton Town.
Luton Town. Right. All right, so Luton Town, they have to make adjustments.
They have to make adjustments to play in the Premier League, yeah.
Right. The old boys, that you know, we're kind of jumping between episodes here, but their stadium, if they were to get promoted, they would have to do renovations there? Is that same way in Argentina or no?
That's a 20,000-person stadium.
But it's like also up against the wall. Like
it's a weird-looking stadium.
Yeah. But like there looks like there's two rows of seats behind one goal, you know?
And
it's up against the weird like thing a warehouse about all
boys,
wall.
I mean, yeah. We'll talk about that in the next episode, but all boys, La Popular, which is the cheap seats where all the rowdy fans go, is not behind the goals, but on the side. If you notice that,
yeah,
it's a little different.
Yeah,
that stadium. I don't know why they did it like that, but it's a cool looking stadium.
And they made fun of the poor San Lorenzo people, or was it the old boys, the bald linesman?
That was at all boys. They made fun of
poor guy. The guy's bald. Leave him alone. Yeah, I take that very personally. Yeah. Anyway, okay. So we know we talked about, you know, the people just being there to sing. We talked about the Pope. We talked about the Libertadores Cup. We talked about the Boedo exodus. Why is it still so important for them to go back to Boedo? They've been where they're home now 33 years. Flores.
Right.
Don't they deserve Paco to be embraced Flores at this point? I mean, you know, like they welcome them with open arms, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I think they just, the dream is to, you know, that's their home. And that's where they want to return. You know, I think it eventually just becomes an obsession. You know, I mean, like they took this from us and we want it back. And Carrefour closed that location in 2019. So
it's just an empty lot now?
I think they're trying to buy it. And I think they may have bought it. But, you know, they have to build a stadium. So they're going to need the money to build a stadium.
No public funding for stadiums in Argentina, I would presume?
I don't know. I'm not sure. You know,
I mean, because there's so many based in Buenos Aires.
Here's the thing. They don't build new stadiums in Argentina. You know, there's no new stadiums.
For those of you, you know, maybe not from the States, while I'm asking, the reason I'm asking this is here in the United States, every arena, every stadium has public funding and attached to it. In most
not
cases,
everyone. Jerry Jones
built his own stadium. Are you sure they didn't give him any help?
I thought Jerry Jones put his own money
up. Put his own money up? Wrong, okay. But all right, maybe there are a couple exceptions.
But you're right.
By and large... Yeah. There are some stadiums that the owners paid very little for, if not nothing for. Like the city built the stadium for them to keep the team there.
And then they keep the money from the...
And then they keep the money from all the sales, right. So it's such a, you know, the wealthy get privileges over here kind of model, you know. Like, and that's the whole reason why if you're following American sports, for those of you not here in the States... The A's, the Oakland A's, are a very historic baseball team, right? They are now moving. They're the last team to move from Oakland, going to Vegas, because Vegas is built in the stadium.
Officially?
They're going to Vegas officially.
So
yeah.
Oakland,
the whole Oakland Raiders, Oakland A's, Jesus. And you know, I believe Las Vegas will be the next NBA.
Isn't Golden State Oakland?
Golden State. They moved to San Francisco.
They're in San Fran now.
Yeah, they're in San Francisco now. Yeah. So, like, I think next year the A's are going to play in Sacramento until the stadium's built, or maybe for the next 2 years, and then they're going to move to Vegas eventually. That's going to be their home. Yeah.
They're moving to Sacramento to play? Why don't they just stay in Oakland?
Because their lease is up and they don't want to stay in Oakland. Yeah. Because Oakland won't build
a baseball field in Sacramento?
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah. Wow.
So they're going to be in Sacramento for a year or two, something like that, and then they're going to move to Vegas full time.
I'm assuming it's going to be a dome.
I hope so. Yeah, 130 degrees in the summer, man. You're like, no way, dude. Yeah. And baseball's a summer sport. So anyway, yeah, the long story short, the reason they're moving to Vegas is they're getting a free stadium. So
right. So there's no new stadiums. All the stadiums are old, almost all of them. Even the Monumental, which is the biggest stadium in the country where all the national team games are played, that's River Plate Stadium.
Right.
They just renovated it. It looks beautiful, but... that was just renovated. It's not like they built a new one.
Right.
Boca Juniors is trying to expand, but they're surrounded by La Boca neighborhood, and they're trying to buy
eminent domain.
They're trying to pay people. They're not. I don't think they can just go and be like, "Hey, we're going to take this eminent domain."
Eminent domain, you pay what's the value is, right?
Right. But yeah. I don't think the government can go in and be like, "We need to take this."
Okay. In the United States, there's a law called eminent domain. Yeah. I feel like we have to explain all this. Eminent domain meaning that if it's for the greater good, if it's for the public good, they will evict people. They'll pay people like the value of their home and basically make them take it and get out.
Which right? is how, what they did for Chavez Ravine and Dodger Stadium. And they kicked out all those Mexican immigrants, or I don't know if they might have been American, but they kicked out a lot of people from that spot.
Yep. So, yeah, so, oops, as my glasses fall to the ground. So what we were talking about that. So no, okay. So no eminent domain.
Right. So the stadium, the
club, they have to negotiate.
The club will probably have to put up their own money. I think they have to buy the property, and then put up their own money to build a stadium, which you know is not cheap. And these clubs are strapped for cash. You know, the clubs in Argentina aren't owned by rich billionaires or even millionaires. They're owned. They're funded by the
popular
the members, the socios, right. You know, and whatever commercial ventures they get into and money at the gate, you know, they don't have the money that even Brazilian teams are being bought up by foreign investors, and Argentina doesn't exist. That's why the club teams are falling behind Brazilian teams in Libertadores. There hasn't been an Argentinian Libertadores winner in like 6-7 years when Brazilian teams have won them all.
So it just needs like an wealthy investors to go in there and start buying up teams.
That's not in the plans. I haven't heard that. I don't think you can just go in. You can't just go in and buy a River Plate or Boca Juniors or anybody.
Right.
It's just not the way it works. I mean, maybe one day it'll happen, but I don't know. You lose something with that too, you know.
Yeah. Now, no alcohol served in any of the arenas or stadiums that you've covered thus far.
There's no alcohol served at public gatherings like concerts, sports, or anything like that.
Argentine national law?
I believe so, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so they drink before the games. They bring their own, they'll buy it there.
Okay, I understand. Maybe you can, if you want to stretch your brain, you could make an argument for that, right? Because I'm sure that was lessons learned the hard way.
England either. You can't drink in a stadium. There's no alcohol.
I wouldn't be surprised if you know that hits here someday soon. Like, you know,
no way. But, that would never happen.
People would revolt in the streets.
That would never happen.
Yeah, here. But it would be, and that's the thing. I get if you want to make the case for the alcohol ban at these events, I could see the rationale and the logic. However, why not the model of selling food? I mean, it's a killing. That's where the teams make their killings. Here in the United States.
It's bizarre.
Why hasn't the vendor, like, you know, hot dogs and burgers... whatever the Argentine equivalent is caught on down there.
In Argentina,
that's such a revenue stream that they're missing out on.
The people that sell food are usually on the outside of the stadium. You see some guys walking around the stadium with Cokes and maybe some kind of sandwiches, but you don't see it. You don't see too many of them. There's no setup. There's some concessions, but not like here. It's wild. Like, I don't know why. Maybe it's not worth it. Maybe just people just won't buy.
Maybe they don't have the resources. Yeah,
you got to think like we go to games and we spend $12 on a beer.
Yeah, yeah.
And a hot dog, I don't know, $7, and we're
hot dog and a beer, $20 easy.
But we know that going in. Like,
yeah.
We know we're going to a game. We're gonna spend a shit ton of money on food if that's what we want to buy, or beer because it's priced into what the experience. There, it's not. They don't even go there. They drink before, and that's about it. They don't. It's only 2 hours, so you can, you know, you eat before you go in, you drink before you go in.
I guess that's another one, right? Because at a baseball game, you could be there for four and a half hours sometimes. Yeah,
and you smoke probably in the stadium if you want to smoke. But
right, know. Right, okay. So moving on. The Boedo exodus, and you said they bought the property, or San Lorenzo's in negotiations to rebuy the property.
I think they're in the process of buying it.
What's that going to mean when they go home? I mean, generations?
I think it's going to be a huge deal for them. It's going to be like, it's like going back home. It's like their spiritual home. They're going to be, you know, 30 years of being out there.
But their fan base now has spread out because of this nomadic kind of life, right? Yeah. So it was kind of a blessing in disguise in many ways that they expanded their fan base.
I think Boedo, the neighborhood itself, is still heavily San Lorenzo.
Has anyone encroached on that Boedo area since they left?
I'm sure there's probably definitely Boca and River fans in there.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a neighborhood that, you know, a lot of people move in and out of. So you could.
How far away is Flores from Boedo?
It's not that far. It's just a few neighborhoods away.
Okay.
Yeah, it's all in Buenos Aires. So
yeah,
but it's not that far.
In Buenos Aires, you know how New York City is broken up into five boroughs?
Right.
Is Buenos Aires broken up into all these little neighborhoods? And do you know, is there a count of how many neighborhoods?
I don't know the count of the neighborhoods, but it's the boroughs is different because you got to think of it more as like neighborhoods in Manhattan. You know, Manhattan has Soho, yeah. Chelsea, Upper East Side, Village, Lower East Side, right. Village. Upper East That's Side. What Buenos Aires is, because Buenos Aires is not sectioned off like. There's Staten Island, there's Brooklyn and Queens, which is part of Long Island. There's the Bronx, which is in between, and then there's Manhattan, which is the island. Buenos Aires is just one large, vast section. And then there's the neighborhoods. There's Palermo, Villa Crespo, Flores, Foresta, Recoleta.
You know. So the clubs mark the territories, basically. Buenos Aires, the Argentine National League, the soccer league, seems to be most heavily concentrated in the Buenos Aires area.
Yeah, well, most of the teams in the first division will be from Buenos Aires.
Okay.
There's a lot of clubs.
So it would be like London having a predominant amount of the Premier League teams.
Yeah, I don't know if they do. They?
I don't know. But I'm saying if they would.
If you think about it, they got.
Okay, well, let's see. Chelsea, Tottenham. Chelsea. Arsenal,
Crystal Palace,
West Ham,
Brentford, six.
Is that it?
I think I'm missing one.
Yeah, let me look.
But yeah, it doesn't reach 10. I don't think it reaches 10. There's Villa's Birmingham. There's the two Liverpool teams. There's the two Manchester teams. There's Brighton, Southampton. They're on the south. I think there's one we're missing. But either way, it doesn't matter. It's like six or seven.
Has seven. Yes. Arsenal, Brentford, Chelsea, Crystal Palace, Fulham, we forgot, Tottenham, Hotspur, and West Ham United. So seven of the how many?
20.
All right, yeah, so not quite, but.
So Buenos Aires will have.
Almost, yeah. They have, and then we have the two Manchester teams, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Right, that always seem to be the most dominant teams. It's crazy. Anyway.
Who's the most dominant teams?
Well, in the 90s, in the Beckham days, it was Man City. Man U, and now it's Man City. You know, like
this Man City thing is a recent thing. They were never really dominant ever.
This is their era. Yeah,
right, this is their era.
Yeah, I mean, this is the golden era. This is right. Yeah.
But you know, I mean, Liverpool also
is Pep that good?
Apparently, I mean,
is it just like? Because I think you saw the Pep effect more in those Barca teams because of the level of talent they had, right? With Xavi and Iniesta and Messi and Piqué and all those guys. The way they move the ball, like there's this play that I watched in that documentary, Take the Ball, Pass the Ball, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Where they literally dribble the ball out of their own, like they're in front of their own goal. And they're so calmly just dribbling the ball out.
Is that when he was in Barcelona?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, you see it. Like you just see it. Like they don't clear the ball to midfield. Right. They just go bing, 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 right. And then they go all the way up the field and actually score a goal. It's something to behold. But like, is it that? Is it just the way he took this Cruyff thing and just elevated it to another level?
Let's not forget, Barcelona wasn't. You know, they had won a Champions League in 2006 with Frank Rijkaard without Pep. You know.
Yeah.
So they were. Up there now,
Pep, but then they also had a crappy season under Rijkaard.
Yeah,
they? Yeah.
But Pep took them to another level. And
is that the best team ever? That Pep Barcelona.
A lot of people think that's.
What do you
if
think?
If not the greatest, yeah. You know, I don't know. It's hard to, you know. I put them up there in top five greatest teams of all time, probably.
Yeah.
Top 10 for sure. He goes to Bayern Munich. You know, that's another team that's set up for greatness. you put a little pep in there, and it's, you know, they're just not going to fail.
Yeah.
He never won a Champions League with them, but...
But, like, you know, the one thing that great players have gone to Pep and failed miserably, right? Like the guy we both like, Zlatan.
He just... I don't think they got along, and I don't think he fit what they were trying to do.
Right.
But, you know, not everybody's going to work out. But then he went to Man City, where he's got ungodly amount of money. He has great players, and he puts his stamp on it. And I mean, you can't argue with his success. I mean, he's won what, 6 out of 7 titles.
How good is Foden?
He's great.
Like how good are we? Are we talking about Ballon d'Or level?
He could be. I think in the problem with playing at Man City with Pep is that it's a system, so it kind of takes away a little bit of creativity from these guys. That's why Grealish went there, and he's not the same player he was in Aston Villa. Villa, he was the guy, the man, the star, and he was creative, and it was fun to watch. Man City is just another one of the guys.
Yeah, and his star has fallen.
Because he's just another one of the guys.
Yeah.
I mean, Phil Foden, he actually can, you can see the skill there. You can see him shine, even though he's part of that system. But you can see the things he can do. But, you know, even this year, he's kind of had like a step back this year.
And plus the giant,
Holland.
Assassin. Right, yeah. The guy that looks like the assassin from Da Vinci Code.
Or any James Bond movie.
Or any James Bond movie. Yeah. Yeah. He is, like, does he take away so much shine from, like, the other guys, too? I mean, it's ungodly what he's doing.
He kind of plays... He forces Man City to play a different way that Pep probably doesn't want to play, but he's such a force of nature, you have to almost adapt to the way he plays if you want to use him correctly. So, yeah.
And we may never see him in the World Cup, right?
I think you'll see him in this next World Cup.
Because Norway will make it?
They have to. They have not only him, but Odegaard is a beast.
Yeah, Odegaard.
So I think they're going to be all right. I think they'll make it. I hope so. You want to see the best players at that level.
Yeah, I mean, just to see him on the world stage would be just amazing to see.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the supporting cast is not going to be nearly as what it is, you know, at Man City, even in the Norwegian national team, you know. Like,
no, it's not. But,
I mean, Odegaard can feed him all day, probably, you know, right? Yeah.
They'll probably be high-scoring games because I think their defense is the weak link there.
One thing I just want to kind of end with San Lorenzo. So, where are they? Well, let's kind of talk about the now. Where are they? Is the Argentinian soccer football season over?
No, they're
where are they now? Playoffs?
No, there's no playoffs in the first division. There's playoffs in the second division. The Argentinian system is so messed up. It's hard to keep up with. They're constantly changing it, which is annoying. I think there's like 28 teams right now in the first division.
28?
I think so, yeah. Vélez Sarsfield is in first place.
Huracán
Vélez Sarsfield. They're a team from Buenos Aires.
And where's San Lorenzo on that? At mid-table?
They're below mid-table. They're in bad shape. And they're arch rivals. There's 5 big clubs, right? So Boca has River as their arch rivals. Independiente has Racing as their arch rivals.
The Derby,
the Clásico.
Yeah.
San Lorenzo's Clásico is against Huracán.
Huracán.
Right.
And how would that be said in English? Hurricane?
Hurricane.
Oh, Hurricane.
Yeah. It's Huracán. Weird. They're Huracán, but their symbol, they're also known as the balloon. They have a big balloon as their symbol.
All right.
I don't know. I'd have to look up their history.
Well, the Hurricane balloons, I guess, has some... menace.
Well, that's why
nature,
that's why San Lorenzo, one of their nicknames is the Cyclones, because the Cyclone is, they say that the Cyclone is a bigger, faster version of a hurricane, so they call themselves the Cyclones. They're also called the Crows because priests look like crows, they say.
Priests?
Yeah, that's what the saying comes from. And also called Matador because of the team from the 1940s, the Killers. They would never lose, so they were called the Killers. So Huracán is their arch rival.
Is that what Matador means? Killer?
Well, I'm always confused about this because there's been a lot of players, especially strikers, called Matador, right? Killer. I'm slipping my mind like the guys that were called Matador. Matador. Anyway, but Matador means killer, but it also means matador, like a bull.
Yeah, fighter. That's what I'm asking. Like, because they're going to eventually kill the bull, they call them killers?
Right. So I don't know if, like,
Which, by the way, is why I won't watch. Yeah.
When they refer to a matador as referring to as a nickname for a striker, I don't know if they're referring to him as a killer, like an assassin, or like a bullfighting matador.
Right.
I don't know. But anyway, they're both killers. Matador is killing people, I guess. One is killing a bull.
All right, keep picking names, San Lorenzo. You're just like, oh, we're going to be called this and that.
Well, you don't pick.
We're going to be called the supermarketeers.
You pick the names. I think the fans come up with the nicknames.
The cashiers.
It's not like here where they.
Because of a supermarket?
It's not like here where, like, when the Las Vegas Golden Knights put out something.
Terrible name. Paper too. I mean, you live in Vegas. The best thing you could do is Golden Knights.
They put out a poll saying, what do you want us to be called? And they get out all the. In Argentina, they're just known as the club. And then these nicknames come out.
Come along.
The way it is.
Like, yeah.
But anyway.
I mean, at least the women's team are the Aces. That makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, Golden Knights.
What should they have been?
The Kings? Well, no, they can't be the Kings. LA Kings, I guess, are there, right? Slot machines. The prostitutes.
The gamblers.
The legalized. Yeah, the gamblers.
Just been the perfect. Gamblers.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I mean, they had the song gamblers. Built in.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, seriously. Got Kenny Rogers playing? Absolutely. Yeah. But the Golden Knights. Terrible. Anyway.
But wait, so in the current league, which is coming to an end, there's like 5 or 6 games left. Vélez Sarsfield is in first, and Vélez Sarsfield considering themselves the 6th biggest team. Like they say, we're a big team because they've won a lot of stuff in the past 30 years. And behind them is Huracán, who they consider themselves the 6th biggest team. So they're first and second. And then there's like some teams from the provinces that are doing pretty well too.
Okay. Now,
San Luis is not doing great. They're below mid-table. They did just contract a Spanish player from Athletic Bilbao called Munain, who's a pretty big name in Spain. And I guess he chose San Lorenzo to go end his career.
Okay, cool. All right. So what fascinates me about Argentine history, obviously we know, like, don't cry for me, Argentina. We know all that. Like, here, you know, from the outside looking in Argentina, but the junta figures into so much, especially modern history with Argentina. And what really kind of took me aback here was the direct impact the junta has had on San Lorenzo, right? So that we don't, again, that folklore, as you spoke about, that the junta could have been very instrumental in the kicking San Lorenzo out of their Boedo home, right? So kind of for the American fan, and so the Argentine listeners can correct you, talk about the rise of, like, when the junta came to prominence, the junta as we know it, until its fall, and what the downfall was. Was it revolution? Was it, can you kind of give us a brief, very brief history? Because we are running long here.
I'll give you a brief history, and not that I know even a...
Yeah, as far as you know,
of
right.
Of the history, but... there have been...
Because I think it's important, especially coming up, the reason I'm asking, you know, Tuesday is a huge day here in the United States, right?
Election day, yeah.
Yeah, it's election day here. Huge day, huge consequences, huge ramifications. So I think it's important to know just how the fragility of what someone may hold dear, how easily it can be taken from them. And I think that's why it's a good segue as to why the junta is relevant now.
Argentina has a history of the military taking over. It's got a crazy political history with Juan Perón, who,
Eva Perón, right?
Eva Perón's husband, right. Who's a huge political figure when all these strong men were coming up in Europe. A little bit after that was Juan Perón. And to this day, the Peronist movement is pretty strong in Argentina.
The what?
Peronist. Peronista. So... there's been a long history of the military just...
Explain what the Peronista is to the American listener right now.
Now it's kind of like a political party, but, when Juan Perón was coming up, and I don't know...
So its namesake is Perón, Peronista,
right?
Okay.
So, he had his own history. I can't get into too much because I'm...
That's fine.
I didn't study it enough for me to be commenting on it, but... I really should start reading some books on it because it is interesting history. But I know he was for the working people, and you know he, that's way he, that's the way he persuaded a lot of the people to back him. Anyway, the military has had a history of taking over the country in, you know, in the last century. So in the late 70s, they were running stuff in Argentina, and that's, like I said before, it was a dirty war where people were disappearing. Dissenters were disappearing. There was guerrilla warfare.
And that dirty war was the junta's during their ascension to power? Or
it was during, while they were in
while
power.
While they were in power, okay.
The people were disappearing, you know, people that disagreed with the government, students, young people. Mm-hmm. They would show up to people's houses and they would be gone and you wouldn't see them again. They were being tortured. You know, there have been stories of people being thrown out of helicopters, that kind of thing. And, you know, there was the military being attacked too. There was guerrilla style warfare in the streets, in the city. So it was, you know, it's a long, rich history.
Almost a civil war.
It was like a civil war in the streets, you know.
And the rebels were from the junta's perspective, the terrorists.
They would consider them terrorists.
From the freedom fighter side, you know, they're the freedom fighters, right? So like, was all that in an effort to kind of, you know, thumb their nose at the junta and fight for their liberation.
Thumbing
their
nose. I think they just were fighting for what they believed in. And who wants to be in a military dictatorship?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Get your freedoms taken away. And they were called like the Montoneros. You know, I'm not saying that they were right all the time because they used violence to meet their ends.
And, yeah.
You know, I've spoken to a lot of different, you know, a lot of older guys who said, you know, the military dictatorship wasn't great, but you know, people on the other side also had their own goals, and they try to get their goals met by, you know, violence, and it was a violent time. It was a confusing time.
Well, and that's the thing, I think, that is,
and people got caught in the middle that probably didn't deserve to be,
right? You know?
So what were you gonna say?
Okay,
so in the late 70s, all this was going on. You know, the World Cup was in 78. The, you know, San Lorenzo gave up its team, and then in 82 is when the military government was losing a grip on its power, and that's why they attack the Isla Malvinas, Falkland Islands, kind of like to garner support from the people and to get them back behind their leadership.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you know, that was a terrible decision because Argentina had no shot against the might of the English navy.
Right, sure.
And, you know, from where they were all the way in Europe, they came down and, you know, yeah. Argentinians fought bravely, but they just had no shot. And, you know, hundreds of Argentinians.
And how much longer after that until the junta fell? Like the disaster
was short.
That was the Falklands.
It was short. I mean, yeah. the war lasted, you know, very short time.
You were well alive during all this.
Like, I was there during the war, I remember. Yeah. But was, you know, I was little.
You came to the United States at how old?
I was two.
Two.
Yeah, but we went, I don't know why my parents sent me, during the war, they sent me back for some reason. I was there.
Yeah.
And I remember watching on TV.
Didn't have to have a conversation with them.
Watching what was going on in the war.
I always kind of presumed you were their least favorite, and now that...
No, my brother was there too. But I remember watching it.
Was Madeline born yet?
She was born, yes.
Yeah, that's why they didn't need you two anymore.
Yeah, all right.
So they, losing that war, kind of like, that was it.
Yeah.
From military dictatorship, and it's been a democracy ever since.
Yeah. And what's this latest guy like? Is he, you know, the one that...
The new president?
Yeah.
Well, you know, the Argentine political system's a mess. There's a lot of corruption. Doesn't matter who's in there. It's
the institution corrupts the man. It's not the...
I don't know where it starts, but I know there's been corruption going on. It's a way of life almost, and that's why a country like Argentina, with all the resources in the world, is
impoverished still.
It's not where it should be.
Is inflation still killing them?
It's rampant. It's terrible. Yeah.
So this guy's done nothing to curtail it, like you said he would.
He's done things. Like, he's definitely cut services that you know, hurting people, but you know, I don't know.
Right.
I'm not sure if he's the right guy or not. I just know that it's a mess.
And so why did they, like, what do you feel like, based on your research, it might not have been extensive, why did they come in? Why San Lorenzo and that property? What was the value of that? Or, like, you know, like, do we have any sort of background on that? Like, why they tried to bully San Lorenzo out? Is just because they wanted to sell that property? Because it was such a prime location?
Maybe just some guys got into a room. You're like, listen, we need money. We want this piece of property. Maybe, who knows? Like, the people that bought it, Carrefour.
Did the Junta force any other club out, as far as you know?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it could be, you know, just speculating. It could be Carrefour came in, like, we want to come in and open up some avenues in Argentina, give us some property, and they grease the right people, and that's how things work.
Yeah, right.
So the government forces Sound Insider to sell. Somebody in the government gets paid to sell it to the Carrefour.
How much capitalism has come down to Argentina? Like, are there supermarkets down there? Or are they all, like, little stores?
No, like supermarket.
Okay,
that's like modern country.
Okay, all right. I wasn't sure. Yeah, like, you know,
they
like,
have malls and they have cars and everybody's not in a horse and buggy, you know.
I didn't mean to make it sound like that, but like, just like, do you see McDonald's on every corner?
Not on every corner.
Yeah,
they have McDonald's. Yeah.
Okay,
Wendy's.
Yeah, like we're here.
Starbucks.
I mean, what I'm saying is, you know, the juxtaposition between the United States and then every other part. Like, there's a McDonald's, there's a Chipotle, there's a Burger King, there's a Taco Bell everywhere. Like, right. You can't throw a stone without hitting it. That's what I'm asking. Is it that capitalistic?
It is. I mean, there's traffic lights and elevators and.
You're confusing technology with capitalism. I'm talking about free market kind of.
Yes, there's a free market.
Okay.
There's definitely a lot of Starbucks.
Yeah.
More than I thought there'd be.
Yeah. Which is what, you know, just completely off topic, but I'd love driving through Lancaster County, like seeing people on horse and buggy still, you know, like. There's something really awesome about that. Like, they don't need
cool.
the modern luxuries that we
need. You do see a horse and buggy once in a while in Argentina.
Oh, the gauchos. Yeah.
No, the gauchos do exist, but out in the country. Like,
I saw
in
the
city,
the
you'll
Conan
see
O'Brien.
Some guy in a horse
with
just a garbage guy just picks up shit off the street and he's just sitting
in a horse and buggy.
Garbage, and he'll just be with a donkey walking.
Well, you see it in Baltimore, too. Yeah, people do.
Yeah, it's wild.
So. All right, well, I guess that's the end of the San Lorenzo one.
One thing.
We'll go, did you see the professional closing on that, too? Well, that's the end of the San Lorenzo one. I'm so good at this. Go ahead.
San Lorenzo, just a little nugget, is the Viggo Mortensen's favorite club.
Yeah. Is he from Argentina?
I think he studied down there. I think he lived there for a while.
If
you've seen his... I think at the Academy Awards, I think he won one. He had a San Lorenzo flag with him.
Did he really?
He's a big, huge
fan. Supporter, huh?
All right. So the Pope and
Viggo Mortensen, pretty cool fan base. Yeah. Yeah. The Pope. I mean, Pope means God is on their side, isn't that what the Pope is? You know, so God roots for San Lorenzo, and as far as Catholicism is concerned, yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, hard to root against San Lorenzo.
Or
but, you know, good luck and don't get relegated. Ciao. My name's Al Shirtum. That was?
I'm Federico Ferro.
And you've been listening to What Is This Place? San Lorenzo.
The podcast.
What is this place?